Reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 1, Chapter 11, Text 3. Tam upasruta ninadam jagatvaya bhayavaham pratyujayu prajasarva bhartri darshana lalasa. The citizens of Dwarka, having heard that sound which threatens fear personified in the material world, began to run towards him just to have a long-desired audience with the Lord, who is the protector of the devotees. As already explained, the citizens of Dwarka, who lived at the time of the Lord's presence there, were all liberated souls who descended there along with the Lord as entourage. All were very anxious to have an audience with the Lord, although because of spiritual contact, they were never separated from the Lord. Just as the gopis at Vrindavan used to think of Krishna while he was away from the village for cowherding engagements, the citizens of Dwarka were all immersed in thoughts of the Lord while he was away from Dwarka to attend the Battle of Kurukshetra. Some distinguished fiction writer in Bengal concluded that the Krishna of Vrindavan, that of Mathura, and that of Dwarka were his different personalities. Historically, there is no truth in this conclusion. The Krishna of Kurukshetra and the Krishna of Dwarka are one and the same personality. The citizens of Dwarka were thus in a state of melancholy due to the Lord's absence from the transcendental city. As much as we are put in a state of melancholy at night because of the absence of the sun. The sound heralded by Lord Krishna was something like the heralding of the sunrise in the morning. So all the citizens of Dwarka awoke from a state of slumber because of the sunrise of Krishna, and they all hastened towards him just to have an audience. The devotees of the Lord know no one else as protector. The sound of the Lord is identical with the Lord, as we have tried to explain by the non-dual position of the Lord. The material existence of our present status is full of fear. Out of the four problems of material existence, namely the food problem, the shelter problem, the fear problem, and the mating problem, the fear problem gives us more trouble than the others. We are always fearful due to our ignorance of the next problem. The whole material existence is full of problems, and thus fear the fear problem is always prominent. This is due to our association with the illusory energy of the Lord, known as Maya or external energy. Yet all fear is vanquished as soon as there is the sound of the Lord, represented by his holy name, as it was sounded by Lord Chaitanya in the following 16 words. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. We can take advantage of these sounds and be free from all threatening problems of material existence. Om Jnana Timurandasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Taksur Unmulitam Yena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha Sri Chaitanya Mano Vishtam Rapitam Yena Bhutale Sayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati sapadantikam vanchakalpa tarubhyascha kripa sindhu bhayevacha patitanam bhavanebhyo vaishnavebhyo namo namah. Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Siadvaita Gadadhar Sivasadegor Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. Well, greetings from Vrindavan. I'm sitting in my room. And I have to say, I can't be more happy than where I am and what I'm doing. My room, it's strange. It's in a big apartment building, but it's somehow at the corner in New York. If you play for airspace, you know, you have an apartment, then there's a certain amount of space that's legally in that apartment before somebody else can put up something. So the more distance that space is, the more valuable the apartment is. Somehow I have maximum airspace. Straight ahead of me is just this beautiful forest with millions of birds, really, literally. And then to the left of me is a Sanskrit school where they chant mantras all day. And I just can't say enough about Vrindavan. I just came. I left early. I was invited to a function in Prabhupada's rooms where he passed away for the disappearance of Vibha Chaitanya 9 years ago. The jewel of the Krishna Balaram Mandir, the jewel. He was the cook. Borjan was saying, you know, he was sincere. Sincere and no nonsense. Very sweethearted, sincere, no nonsense. He gave himself 100%. He used to cook in the kitchen from 2 in the morning till 10 at night. It took 6 people to replace him. And he would chant all day. And I was speaking how he was self-effulgent. And self-effulgent means everyone can recognize him. You may be a great speaker, a great kirtaneer, a great manager, make great festivals, do so many things. Some may recognize you and some may not. Because your greatness is not 100%, if your greatness is not 100% connected to the soul. When someone's activities, even if they're simple, are 100% connected to the soul, their purity, their love, their selflessness is something that everyone can recognize. And everyone, old, young, whoever was here, recognized him as a devotee of the highest level of surrender and consciousness. In what, 30 years, he never once left the boundaries of the Krishna Balaram Mandir. That means not the MVT, nothing. It was his room and the temple. Never left. Just service and the nature of service. I remember when he was passing away that night, I went to his room and the doctor showed me, you know, just before someone's going to be incapacitated to the extent that he can't exert his own will, it's the responsibility of the doctor to get that person's wishes. So he wrote his wishes. I remember 2 out of the 3. One, under no circumstances take me out of ISKCON Vrindavan, take me to the hospital. Under no circumstances, take me to the hospital. The other one is, please do not allow anyone to serve me. So look at his faith. His faith was in service, not being served. 100% sincere. And such a person like that, he's recognized or she's recognized by everyone. And those are the people that have the most influence on the spreading of Krishna consciousness. Because they maintain the depth. They maintain the depth of Krishna consciousness. So it was great. I'm almost sorry I had to leave, but I'm also, you know, dedicated here and happy to give the class. But it's just so wonderful. And you know, the Krishna Balaram Mandir, it's just such a powerful place, so well managed, such a community, and so many, an ocean of sincere devotees. So it's quite wonderful indeed. Okay, so now the last year practically we've just been following Krishna, and this is the process. This is what makes everything auspicious. I was reading in the prayers of Akrura that hearing about Krishna beautify and purify everything. So Prabhupada said, if you have a place where the glories of Krishna are not being pronounced, then that place is a graveyard. it's from your partnership, your family, your community, your country. He said it's a graveyard if people are not glorifying God. Because the whole purpose of this world is to become humble and to become a servant. And we're attached to the conception of being the center for enjoyment and control. I explained this many times. So what the pastimes of Krishna do, hearing about Krishna and hearing about his beauty and his qualities and his pastimes, they touch the soul and they awaken that desire to serve. That's what gives life. Chanting and bhakti is chanting and hearing. And that's what decorates our body. Otherwise, the Bhagavatam says it's like a corpse. A corpse has decorations, but they're useless. There's no use. So chanting and hearing, bhakti, it animates us. It gives us life. And it simultaneously gives us life, and it's the decoration of our body. Like the gopis, the ornaments of their ears where they're hearing about Krishna constantly. And because this is what purifies one, I was speaking, even chanting the holy name, where are you going to get some bandha? Where are you going to get relationship? Where are you going to get significance from chanting the name unless you understand the glories and beauty of the person whose name you're chanting? And that's the Bhagavatam. Bhurijan Prabhu gave such a wonderful katha on Kaliya Leela, and I was listening every day, and you know, it wasn't that much philosophy, but every word would expand and develop the picture of Krishna. And it had an effect on me. It became more than the words. It became Krishna. That's what happens when someone can expertly present the message of Krishna. They expertly present the message of Krishna. Krishna is that message. So it's beyond, it's not just intellectual, it's experiential. You actually feel God. And you feel the relevance and the faith and understand that this is the ultimate reality. The ultimate reality is beautiful. Because the ultimate reality is love. And love means to offer the best. Love is beauty. It's beautiful. That's what beauty is. There's a story of one monk, one brahmachari, or sannyasi, or someone, he's looking in the mirror in the morning. And then another monk who's more senior, more advanced, he said to him, he said, don't think that you know, you think you're beautiful. What is beauty? Beauty is compassion. Beauty is compassion. Beauty is that sacrifice in the heart. That's what real beauty is. Anyway, you hear about this. It gives life. It nourishes. And that's exactly what this story is saying here. That the citizens of Dwarka, they're in separation. So we're getting to see love in its shapes of union and separation. They're leaving Dwarka. It's separation. They're leaving Hastinapur. It's separation. They're entering into Dwarka. It's union. And things come to life. When Krishna goes to the forest in the morning, then all the residents of Vrindavan, they lose their lives and the trees blossom and bloom. And then when Krishna leaves the forest, in the morning they go out, when he comes back and he leaves the forest, late afternoon, early evening, then the forest withers. It's this concept that this is what gives life. And because this is what gives life, all our acharyas, their greatest contribution was the books that they give. What is Prabhupada's greatest contribution? His greatest contribution are his books. Because his books are the method to actually purify and give life. I was in Govardhan, and the devotees were reading 5 hours a day Prabhupada's books. And it wasn't my method, because they had a taste that they just liked to read. They didn't really like to discuss. It was about 20 people. My method of study is a little different, but I don't denigrate at all what they were doing. It was wonderful. But I could tell you, it was such life. It's such life when people chant and hear about Krishna. And it gives life to community. It gives life to family. So we're seeing that in the Bhagavatam. And we're seeing that great devotees, they're always thinking of Krishna. And thinking of Krishna, even in separation, is being with Krishna. One great Vaishnavacharya said that God is infinite, so there is no circumference. Where there is no circumference, the center is everywhere. If God is infinite, then the center is everywhere. And then your connection with that center is your consciousness. You can't travel to God by a physical means. It just doesn't work that way. He's another dimension. You can travel as far as you want. Even the, you know, what is that Hubble and the telescopes, they discover literally there are, they've noted that there are billions of universes. So even if you travel by the state of, by this, the speed of mind, pantastu koti sata vatsara sampragam yo vayor atapi manasamani pungavanam, you don't touch the toes of Krishna. So our distance from Krishna is our consciousness. So here, they're thinking of Krishna in separation, and they're thinking of Krishna in union. And when they hear that Krishna is coming, they run towards Krishna. We have to understand what Krishna means. Krishna means all attractive. So we know in the world, how attracted are we to certain sights of beauty? And how attracted we are to the touch of certain things and how they feel. And how attracted we are to the sounds and to tastes. But Krishna is the most beautiful. So we can't imagine the allurement, Krishna, the attractiveness of any part of Krishna's body. We're reading in the Bhagavatam that he's called Keshava, one with beautiful hair, and that he spends time decorating his hair. It's a very special hairdo. He has the flowers in his ears, so his hair, his long hair, never covers his ears. It's the front and the back, and he wears a turban. In the front, it's beautiful curls. It's never shaggy over his eyes. So it's so beautiful. And therefore, one who understands and realizes Krishna, he runs towards Krishna. And you'll see that in Vrindavan like no other place in the world. No other place in the world. You will see how people run towards Krishna. You go in the Krishna Balaram temple, any time of the year, it's packed. I go there generally for the noon arti. And I try to be in this mood of going to see Krishna. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and Lord Nityananda and Krishna Balaram and Radhasham Sunda. And I try to go in enthusiasm, but when I see the pilgrims, you don't mind being jostled around or pushed or what. Lord Chaitanya didn't mind it. When that lady, he was a sannyasi, he didn't hear the voice of a woman singing, but yet when he was by the Garuda Stambha and this lady wanted to see the Lord, she climbed on his shoulders. And Lord Chaitanya's servants were mortified and they tried to say something. But Lord Chaitanya said, if I had that eagerness to see God, you know, how advanced I would be if I had that eagerness to see God. So here we're seeing, they're eager, they're drawn towards Krishna. They're running towards Krishna. And the goal of our life is to develop that type of attraction. Not artificially, because by chanting and hearing the Bhagavatam, we realize, actually, we experience, not just intellectually, but the message is Krishna, and we actually see Krishna in that message. And we become attracted to Krishna, and we run towards Krishna. And it says, then there's no fear. In presence of God, there's no fear. Akura can't wait. He's going to get really near Krishna's feet. He's going to bow. He's saying, I'm going to bow to Krishna's feet, and then Krishna can put his hand on my head. I'm going to get very close to his feet and do that. Because if I stand, because I'm his uncle, he won't feel proper. But if I'm there, he may give me that mercy. And when he puts his hand on my head, then all the fears of material existence are gone. Because all fear is illusion. Reality is beautiful. Reality is eternal. Reality is full of bliss. And here he mentions the fear problem is in the world because you don't know what's going to happen next. Because we're not the controllers. And we're attached. And we're fearful of our desires not being met. And therefore, we're always in a fearful condition because the world is not within our control. Right now, I love this apartment. This place that I got, any of you that visit, it is so first class. Not only the taste of everything, the functionality of everything, it's nicer in terms of function, in terms of the cabinets, how they function, and the block shades, and it's better than any room I've ever stayed in. Not ostentatious, just functional and very tasty. But I don't want to be attached because I'm not in control. I'm here only by the mercy of Guru and Krishna. And I did realize, I saw that every time someone got their own big house, and somehow they no longer stayed here. That's when you do that, it can foster the consciousness that you're the controller because your environment is the way you want. Whenever the environment gets set up, you have a consent, you have a sense that I've done this, I'm controlling this, but at the same sense, fear. Because as soon as you become attached to something that's temporary, it's filled with duality. Vayam dutiya. From turning away from God, we turn away from ourselves and we develop the false identity. And from that false identity, there's fear. So we can become free from fear. The first instruction that Maharaj Prickett got from Sukadeva Goswami is, if you want to be fearless at the time of death, chant, hear, and remember Krishna. The fear problem is the major problem. We all have it. Because we don't know what our future holds. No one knows what their future holds, except that we will die one day, and we don't want to. So on the platform of ego, the false identity, the temporary identity, that I am the enjoyer and controller, with that conception and desire to do so, puts one always in fear. The spiritual position, there's no fear because it doesn't change. I am a servant of Krishna. I can serve Krishna. And it's not dependent on the environment. And it's not taken away from us even at death. I remember in one crisis I had, the world was moving against my will. I've told this story many times. And when there are difficulties and you can't, and your destiny is not suited to your desires, it's more of an impetus to take the spiritual life. Because
you start to invest in your free will and try to become detached from how the world moves. So I had no choice but to take shelter of the holy name. And then after chanting and chanting and chanting and chanting, a realization awoken in me. A realization woke up in me that the anxieties and the fears and the ambitions and the desires are based on the false conception of the self, which is not even yourself, which isn't yourself. It's a temporary thing. But the chanting and the worship of God that was coming from the holy name, that was connected to my real self. And therefore, that activity and the person doing that activity is eternal and will not be affected by the change of body called death. And that gave me so much, that gave me so much relief. I remember when I first came to Krishna consciousness, and I remember the conception that I had being converted to a type of atheism in school. Teachers systematically tried to make you atheists, and generally they succeeded. And then I just remember the horrible anxiety, the horrible feeling that my future was non-existence. And I remember coming to Krishna consciousness and the rock of that existential burden being taken off of my shoulders. And then I remember the verse, Nehavika Manasho Sti Pratyavayo Navidyate Sopam Apyasya Dayatomatobiyat. That a little endeavor in Krishna consciousness saves you from the greatest type of fear. So we'll go on to the next verse. 4 and 5. Tito panita bhavayo ravir dipta mivadrita atmaramam punakamam nijalabhena nityada pityutfula mukha prochur harsha gagadhaya gira itaram sarva suryadam avitaram nivabhaka. The citizens arrive before the Lord with their respective presentations, offering them to the fully satisfied and self-sufficient one, who by his own potency and incessantly supplies others. These presentations were like the offerings of a lamp to the sun. Yet the citizens began to speak in ecstatic language to receive the Lord, just as wards welcome their guardians and fathers. So God is self-sufficient, and everything we offer to God is God. But he's created this world and manifested his existence for the pleasure of love. And I make this point many times. God has two types of pleasure, bhakti-anand, sarupa-anand, the pleasure, your own pleasure, swarupa-anand, and bhakti-anand, the pleasure that comes from outside you, towards you, in the form of love. And the expression of that love is through the things that God supplies us. The flowers and the food and the jewels and whatever you're offering, even though it comes from God, love is coming from you.
And that's just a vehicle to express that love. The Supreme Lord here is described as Atmaram. He is self-sufficient. And there is no need for him to seek happiness from anything beyond himself. He is self-sufficient because his very transcendental existence is total bliss. He is eternally existent. He is all cognizant and all blissful. Therefore, any presentation, however valuable it may be, is not needed by him. But still, because he is the well-wisher for one and all, he accepts from everyone everything that is offered in pure devotional service. Sometimes, you know, I take people around and they'll give me a donation. I remember this couple from New York, and they gave me 10,000 rupees, and I didn't do it for the money. But I accepted it to honor their appreciation to their benefit. So God accepts things to honor our appreciation for our benefit. But still, because it is not that he's in want for such things, because the things are themselves generated from his energy. The comparison is made herein that making offerings to the Lord is something like offering a lamp in the worship of the sun god. Anything fiery and illuminating is but an emanation of the energy of the sun. And yet to worship the sun god is necessary to offer him a lamp. In the worship of the sun, there is some sort of demand made by the worshiper. But in the case of devotional service to the Lord, there is no question of demand from either side. It's a sign of pure love and affection between the Lord and the devotee. Bhurijan was mentioning that it was one Bengali devotee, Bhumipati, a god brother, that he lived with Vibhu Chaitanya. And he was telling very stories. So when Vibhu Chaitanya was getting initiated, he offered 1 rupee to Prabhupada, his dakshin, and explained to Bhumipati, if I heard the story right, that there are 60 anas, that's a smaller denomination that traditionally made 1 rupee. And Krishna has 60 moons in his body. So giving the rupee represented giving everything to Krishna. Somehow that was the point. And Bhurijan was mentioning that was so symptomatic of Vibhu Chaitanya that he absolutely gave everything to Prabhupada and he didn't want anything back. And Bhurijan was saying how we generally have the hypocrisy of giving to God and doing service and wanting something back in terms of our bhakti. Bhakti is sincere. Sincere means that you're offering your love. You're offering your love for the pleasure of someone else. If you have a motive to get something in return, it's not sincere. It's insincere or hypocritical. So someone with devotion he gives and Vibhu Chaitanya never took anything or wanted anything for himself. We generally want something, some recognition, some encouragement, some support, nothing. comparison is made herein that making offerings, okay. The Lord is the supreme father of all living beings, and therefore those who are conscious of the vital relationship with God can make filial demands from the Father, and the Father is pleased to supply the demands of such obedient sons without bargaining. The Lord is just like the desire tree, and from him everyone can have everything by the causeless mercy of the Lord. I met a sadhu in Vrindavan. I know him for many years, and he's a great scholar. And I somehow get him to talk, and it's just nectar. And he was just talking about Vrindavan, how there really are desire trees. He said, so we desire, we have desires, and whatever we want can be fulfilled. He said, but the tree has a fruit of its own. And that fruit you can only get if you don't desire something for yourself. The desire tree, money, whatever you want, you can get. But the fruit that comes from its own will is love of Godhead. And that you only get when you don't ask for anything. As the Supreme Lord, however, he does not supply to a pure devotee, which is considered to be a barrier to the discharge of devotional service. Those who engage in the devotional service of the Lord can rise to the position of unalloyed devotion by his transcendental attraction. So, are there any questions? Someone could please say hello, so I'll know that.
Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you.
Okay, yeah, I do have a question. I'm glad you asked at this very moment, actually. When you say, I know I've asked you this before, but anyway, when you say that if you ask of a desire tree for something in return, you know, then you won't get the desire tree's own fruit. So what I'm asking is this. If I perform some service, right, and what I'm really wanting is that my future service could be more, would come more out of the heart, out of a genuine affection, is that still considered wanting something?
No, because that's not asking something for yourself. That's asking for Krishna. There are desires that are selfless, and those desires are, what is that desire of bhakti? What is that desire of the heart? It's the desire to just want to please Krishna. So, of course, we did Anandamaya Abhyasat. That, you know, living entity, desire is the symptom of consciousness. But you can desire to help someone else. A mother can desire the welfare and benefit of the child. So, if we really have a pure desire, we want Krishna to be pleased. And we're only asking for love, for the pleasure of Krishna. Otherwise, it does become mixed a bit. But akama sarva kamo va moksha kama udaradi tibrena bhakti yogena yajeta parasham param. Whether akama sarva kama moksha kama, whether you have no desire, all desires, desire liberation, tibrena bhakti yogena, that if you serve very, very forcefully, there's so much benefit to yourself. So not every desire has to be selfish.
No, but the reason why I ask the question is because I've heard from time to time that even, you know, the really pure, pure devotees, they won't even desire spiritual advancement. And, you know, and to want to serve out of genuine affection does
No, that's not true, because sadhana bhakti is the utilization of the senses for the purpose of bhava. You have to have an objective, and our objective is love of Godhead. And we want love of Godhead. But the extent that we want love of Godhead to please Krishna is the extent that we'll get love of Godhead. But yes, we want to be free from suffering, and we want happiness, and devotional service will give that, and that's the objective. But as we advance, we think less and less about ourselves and what we want. And what we want to do is we want to please Krishna. Vasudev Dutta, he prayed that let all the sins of the whole universe come on my head, so everyone else can become liberated. Narayana Prasad, you know, so the devotee doesn't really even desire his own liberation. Nadanam, Najanam, Nasundarim, Kavitam, Vajagadisha, Kamaye, Mama Janmani, Jama Ishvari, Bhavatad, Bhakti, Haita, Kitri. I don't want women, I don't want another followers. Najanam, I don't want beautiful women. I don't want to be learned. I only want your devotional service, birth after birth.
Okay. Yeah.
So we have desire. So it's just a question of. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm just saying.
Okay.
That verse that you quoted before that ended with Yogena, you were saying that the point is that whatever your desire is, the thing is that you should pray according to what you can pray for most forcefully. Isn't it? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah. Yep. Right. You're executing devotional service with force and you become purified. I was reading that today also in the Bhagavatam. Even if it's connected with Krishna and mixed, still we get so much benefit. But obviously, what is the goal? Anya bilashita shunya. We have no personal desire. Okay, Gail, thank you. Anybody else like to say hello? Okay, I heard Kalit Sandhi and okay, and Bill, you'll both be there soon. So I'm looking forward to seeing you. You'll
thank
be able
you,
to come to classes live in my new place. You'll really like my new place. And it's very, very accessible. If you're going to stay near Giriraj Swami, it's about a 3-minute walk, so that's good. Okay.
Excellent.
Anybody else like to say hello?
Hey, Krishna Maharaj.
Hey, Krishna Maharaj. It's Brian Lee from New Jersey. Hope you're well.
Who is it?
Brian Lee.
Say that again.
Bree and Lee.
Oh, Bree and
Lee.
Hare Krishna.
Yeah,
I got it.
Krishna.
I got it. Thanks for coming on. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Yeah, everything's fine. Thank you. Great.
Good.
Wonderful. Good. What is it about Jersey? It's a chakra. Sincere people that listen to my class. I can't, where are the New Yorkers? The New Yorkers make fun of Jersey, but everyone in Jersey is listening. Anybody else want to say hello?
Hi, Maharaj. This is Chaitanya Priya, and I have a question.
Okay.
You talked earlier on about fear the greatest fear being non-existence. I know very clearly and understand that point, that people, because they do not understand the meaning of dying, that they fear it because they don't know what's beyond that point. But inside, before the preoccupation, they don't like to think about it, but the preoccupation is general, is about their future welfare, which they're not in control of. How do you share with them? What is a, well, there are many ways to share with them what is really the meaning of life. But how do you address that fear in all these different forms about food and shelter and family life and all that stuff that they're concerned about? I'm understanding that it
well,
can vary.
Hopefully the society provides basic needs, because most people most people are not on that platform not to worry about these things. So a society should provide them. Otherwise, they are going to worry about the things according to their realization. And the only way to get over that is to understand that God actually, when you have faith in devotional service, you have that God is the protector.
I understand that, Maharaj. I'm thinking of the average person out there who has little or no faith at all. And
then they're
going to
have fear.
The
There's nothing you can do for them.
The society is not in the hands of benevolent people. Actually, in most places, it appears like the demons are, you know, governing. And so they know they're on their own, so to speak. So, yes, we need to talk more about the protection of the Lord. But as you were saying earlier, they're so atheistic that it will take a while, I'm thinking, for them to even comprehend or accept that.
Yes. Okay. All right.
Thank you.
Thank you. Okay. Anybody else? Anybody else like to say hello?
Hari Bo, Shastra Das.
Hey, Shastra. Hari Bo. Great. Okay. A few more people say hello.
Guru Maharaj, can you hear me?
Yeah.
This is Jai Sirade.
Jai Sirade, Hare Krishna, Jai Sirade. Okay, good. Okay, great. Okay, I'm going to have to go now. Hare Krishna, Vanshakopa Turbhya.